All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Onside Inside podcast. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today's episode, we have a special guest, Ethan Inglis from Riot Projects. Ethan's here today to share his journey with us. So, Ethan, thank you for coming. You know, to start us off, can you just, you know, give our listeners a bit of a background story about yourself? You know what I mean? Like, you know, what are you doing now? Who you are? Who Riot Projects is? What do you guys do? Just so they can get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, man. Well, I guess we'll start from the start. Grew up in New Zealand and sort of finishing up school, going to go to university. It's pushed on a lot of people these days, like from schools and stuff.
Where in New Zealand did you grow up?
A little town called Tauranga in New Zealand. Fucking we cut that out, bro. I just said that's from New Zealand. Everyone's going to be like, you've said your country twice.
Yeah.
Start again.
No, it's all good. No, so is it north or south?
Yeah, North Island. Yeah, east coast. So Tauranga is a city, and then there's a little town beside that called Mount Maunganui.
Yeah.
Beachside town, epic spot.
Yeah.
Never thought I was going to leave, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Thought I'd live there my whole life. But yeah, sort of did my apprenticeship there. It was great.
So that's a whole different fucking ball game over there with apprenticeships.
Because
if you jump on, you know yourself, community pages and whatnot, guys that are over there, you know, I love it when they put up, oh, you know, I'm applying for a job as a builder. And then it's like, I feel like in New Zealand, they like a carpenter, they refer to as a builder. But then when you come to Queensland, Australia, it's a completely different thing. You're a builder. There's like polar opposites between the two.
100%, man. Yeah. So like you do a building apprenticeship in New Zealand, whereas you do a carpentry apprenticeship here, and obviously everyone knows what a builder is. A builder's like your principal contractor in Australia. But over there, if you wear a tool belt and swing a hammer and have a Paslo framer, you're a builder.
Yeah.
So it's a bit different. The apprenticeship's good. To be honest, it's a great industry to learn in. There's a few more elements to the apprenticeship, like lots more foundations, set outs, like you're even like hanging plasterboard, doing insulation, all of these things. And then the industry itself is quite different, but also good for learning. Like there's a lot of council inspections through the course of a job.
I've always heard that New Zealand, like if you do your apprenticeship as a carpenter or builder over there, it's like, it's one of the best places. Because it's just the normality. Like, when you try to chase that here, like like we've had guys like try to chase that same sort of thing, but it's not that like easy to get here.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this, because obviously New Zealand's smaller, there's not as many people or whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, you do have to hang plasterboard or whatever. But in Brisbane, for instance, you know, as a builder, you know yourself, sometimes it's easier and cheaper to get subbies, and that's why it's become such a fucking thing of like you pulling the trades apart, you've got plasterers, you've got tilers, you've got concreters, et cetera, and chippies and chippies. So,
100%. It just sort of depends on workload, eh?
Yeah.
Sometimes you need your chippies doing something else, so you'll get a subby in. But yeah, so the industry there was a great place to learn. Actually all my boys are Kiwi over here, sort of a bit of a hack. Queensland carpenters wanted. I just sit there watching, waiting for someone to be moving over and hit
and
them
just
up.
Grab them.
Yeah, just grab them, snag them. So it's working pretty well. I got four Kiwi boys.
Yeah.
I mean, I've worked with plenty of good Aussie chippies and had Aussie chippies on the books, but just don't at the minute.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, so I did my apprenticeship there, stayed there for a year or two, was working as a site foreman, and then really wanted to travel, you know, go and see the world. So moved over to London, was there for 2.5 years.
Yeah. Building. So you moved straight from there, straight from New Zealand, what made you sort of go in that direction?
Man, it was just like I'd wanted to travel for a long time, and actually my two bosses through my apprenticeship, they had both done their time in London, so they were probably, 15 years older. They'd gone over to London, lived there for 2 to 5 years, travelled. When they were there, you could make a lot more money. It was like £3 to the dollar, so you're getting good coins. So after hearing all the stories and everything, I was
like,
that sounds like a bit of me. I want to go see the world and experience things. So ended up doing that, and it was good. Like, you know, it gave me a appreciation for the New Zealand and Australian construction industry.
How did that go when you went over there? Did you have to do any, like, did you apply for a job as a carpenter over there? How was all that? And was there any sort of, like, legality thing of doing that with your trade or anything like that?
Nah, not really at all. Like, it's sort of, you know, in the trade industry, generally, like, you know, you don't ask too many guys for qualifications. Like, you say rock up on site, you know, give you a paid trial for a week or so, and you know generally after the first day. So it was sort of similar there. I was fortunate enough to know a guy from Mount Maunganui who I sort of had a few beers with, and wasn't a great friend or anything, but we became great friends, and he was building over there. And so I asked if he had any contacts, and he put me in contact with a Kiwi builder who had been there for like 20 something years, never moved home, got a job with him, and yeah, the rest was history. Just sort of,
So how old were you when you eventually moved over there?
I was 22, 22 or 23. So I was like 2 years out of my time. I think I started my apprenticeship at like 17, pumped it out in a sort of decent time frame, hung around for a year and a half, and then over there, which was a prime age to go away and and do all that fun traveling and partying.
And I think you said in the thing that you met Mrs. over there.
I actually met her just before I left New Zealand. Okay, probably 6 weeks or 2 months before I left. We were just out and about, big lads weekend, and then we went to this little beach town called Whangamata, and one of the other lads' girlfriends was there, who was friends with my now wife.
Yeah.
And sort of met her there, saw her at the pub, and she looked a bit scary, and I didn't actually talk to her at all. I was like, man, I don't know about this chick. And then just as the night progressed, we sort of got chatting, and then the rest ended up being history. I didn't plan on, we didn't really plan for it to happen, but, you know, it's funny how things just...
Yeah. So tell me, how did you end up, like, because obviously you've gone from fucking New Zealand, how did you end up back in Brisbane? How did all that end up fucking panning out?
Why did you
just go back to New Zealand and stay there? Like, what was...
We had two options. It was Brizzy or New Zealand, and you made so many epic friends when you're traveling, and we made great friends over there, and a couple of them or a few of them were from Brisbane, and they were moving back. We had some friends already living here, and I really wanted to sort of move home, buy a house, probably renovate it, make some money, you know, do what chippies know how to do.
Yeah.
And we looked at going home to New Zealand, but it's just, man, it's tough there. Like, at the end of our 2.5 years, we're, you know, 24, 25. You need a 20% deposit for, you know, 1.2, 1.3 mil where I'm from, which you don't have that at that age generally, especially if you've been traveling, and you can't even work to save that generally either. So we looked into Brizzy, saw house prices were, you know, affordable, pay was better.
Yeah.
We came here, we were like, we'll stay here for 2 years, flip a house, go home.
Yep.
And then we just haven't looked back since, really. It was tough here for the first year or so. And then,
Because you would have had to what? You basically start from zero.
Yeah, start from zero again. So it was the second time starting from zero in a couple of years. We obviously had some good friends who we knew from London. They're still great friends now, but we didn't really have a community. We had no family. Like, we'd already been away from our family for a while, so we missed them. And
Has any of your family moved over here now, or have you?
Still there? Yeah, everyone's still in New Zealand. Oh, sorry, bar my brother. My brother moved over. I managed to talk him into it. He's young and motivated, smart. So I was like, bro, come over here. Like, you know, you can do something with your talent here, more opportunity. Yeah, he's a QS, which is quite handy to have him around.
Yep.
So he's over here, and yeah, that's it at the moment.
Yep.
Trying to con more family into coming over, but there's talk of doing 6 months on, 6 months off, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, sick. So obviously you moved back, you started from zero again, you guys were just kicking rocks at the moment. Mm. Did you end up initially doing that, what, the house flipping straight away, or was it like how did all that work out? What were you doing for a job at that point in time? Did you get a full time gig? Did you go straight to the subby? Like, how did all that work?
Man, so off the plane, again, a good friend from Brizzy, he was here working for a builder.
Mm.
He was an adult apprentice, and he's like, oh, I'll probably sort you out.
Yeah.
So I went, had an interview, got a job, was supervising for them for about 2 years, maybe 2.5 years.
Yeah.
That was all great. I was supervising on a job in Cooperoo, and just down the road there was a house up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Looked into it, liked it. It was just the start of COVID. No one wanted it. Like, it was run down as it was rough. Only someone like us was probably going to buy it.
Yeah.
Bought that, and then yeah, we started working towards that goal of doing what we sort of came here to do.
Yeah.
But then we were just going to renovate it, and then sort of saw some development potential in it.
Mm-hmm.
So decided to pursue that, and then thought it would be easy, but it's definitely not. We're there now, but there was a few years of questioning if we'd done the right thing, and having to sort of believe in our dream and what we set out to do to get it all across the line, get out of council, get a development approval, and
everyone thinks it's a fucking smooth process. Yeah. It's not.
But look, I'm grateful for it. Like, all these hard times we had, like, every single one pointed us in the right direction. Like, it was a course correction. We learned so much. Like, I think that it's important for people to be grateful for the hard times, because they teach you more and point you in the direction of where you need to go more than any of the good times do.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, for sure. I heard like a really good quote. I'm probably going to fuck this up, but I heard it like literally this morning. It was from Steve Jobs, and he said, like, you can, when you look back, like, it's similar to what you were just saying, but when you look back, it's easy to connect the dots, but you cannot connect the dots moving forward. Like, you literally can't. You can't see the dots. You don't know where they are. But when you look back to where you are now, it makes sense. Like, you'd be like, oh, I fucked up there. Like, you can obviously course correct, but moving forward, you can't. So you just sort of have to go off your gut feel and whatever feels right. You know what I mean?
Bro, it sounds airy fairy, eh? But you sort of just got to believe life happens for you. Like, once you start thinking that, like, I see it in my day to day now. Something doesn't go right on site, and then the next day or that afternoon or whatever, I can see how it's worked out positively for us. Like, you start having that view, and I feel like things just start falling into place. Doesn't mean that you're not going to have to work your ass off, and you're not going to get frustrated along the way. You probably
it's just the how you look at it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, so that perspective's everything, I think.
So the one at Cooperoo, so did you end up finishing that? You're still currently in that moment, like,
so we're just completing frame stage of the rear two townhouses and the front.
Oh, so you went full fucking hog development on it?
Yeah,
so
full hog.
So what'd you do? Balled up, like, how big was the block?
Nah, so it was 890 square metres.
Yeah.
It had a pre-war home on it that we tried to get demolished. That was part of the reason it took 3 years to get out of council. We didn't have any luck there for a lot of reasons we won't go into today, but we just turned dirt on that. We turned dirt on it last year actually, and then had some problems with building approval.
Mm-hmm.
But finally ripped in properly sort of March, April this year, and we shifted the pre-war to the front of the section 20 meters, and then two big brand new townhouses out the back, and prettied the old one up and built an under, and so the boys are there flying as we speak.
Exciting. So hopefully I can already tell the pain. There's so much shit. Just the fact that you said 3 years, you know what I mean, in those 3 years, everyone tends to forget the banks still need to be paid, you know 100%. What I mean, fucking the money doesn't, you know, it's when they say 3 years, when you hear about all these developments and you see the shit go up and work start to happen, everyone tends to forget that you know, for as long as that's been sitting there,
yeah,
the banks still collect their money. It doesn't just fucking stop.
Bro, there were some sleepless nights and stressful times for sure. Like, we thought we were going to be starting sort of about September last year. So we lined up our next house, bought it, and then all of a sudden we have all these issues till April, sort of March, April the following year. And I'm paying two mortgages, Christmas, everything. Like, it
comes in.
Yeah. So, it was trying times, I guess, but I wouldn't change any of it. Learned a lot. And I guess it just tests you. You know, do you really want it? Like, you sort of got to figure out what the point of it all is, what's your purpose and all those things. And you figure those out and you can sort of hang in there.
Yeah. So, all right, I feel like we're really missing, like, a bit of an avenue here. So, obviously, we're talking about what you're doing now. You're doing, like, developer, like, you're doing this, you're doing that. But at what point, when you were working as a supervisor there, as you said, you've seen that house.
Yeah.
At what point did you go, because it's a big step. Like, a lot of guys that are listening, what I'm trying to get at is, like, a lot of guys are swinging a hammer day to day or supervising, whatever they're doing, and they all envision working it for themselves.
Mm.
So for you, how was it? Was there a cornerstone moment? How did that, was it just like, all right, I'm finished, like, you shook your boss's hand and said, all right, see you later, and you just went to go pay yourself a wage all the time, like, and then there's all these other challenges that no one loves to talk about, but when you work for yourself as well, guess what? The banks don't look at you as a fucking a treasure piece, right?
Yeah.
They look at you as a liability.
Yeah.
So, how did all that pan out? Like, how did you make that transition from being an employee to, or were you subbing while you were supervising, to working for yourself?
Well, I mean, how far do you want me to go?
Oh.
How deep do you want me to get? Like, do you want me to talk about why I decided to...
Why did you decide to work for yourself? Was it more the flexibility? And then how did you, mentally, basically, prepare yourself to do it? Did you save up enough money to make that jump? Did you do it, because we've had guys in here that have told us that they've done, they worked 2 days a week for someone and then they did 3 days a week for themselves. How was that?
Yeah, well, I guess the cornerstone moment that sort of that was the catalyst for it all is I had it in the back of my head. I'd always wanted to start my own business. Like, when I started my apprenticeship, when I was sort of weighing up other options, still, I saw the positives of earning while you learn, and then where building can take you if you're an entrepreneur or business minded.
Yeah,
and I guess the sort of where it'll change for me is I'd been an employee for probably three-ish years in Australia supervising. I mean, I was just getting worn down and, like, just dealing with trades who produce subpar work, constantly trying to solve issues that I had no real control over. So just felt like my hands were sort of tied. And I just got to the point where I decided I thought I could do it better as a lot of people, or I at least wanted to try. As I know a lot of sort of tradies, that's the sort of what changes everything for them as well. And I just I took the leap, really. Like, I was fortunate. We had bought the house when I was an employee. That definitely made going into business a lot easier. I had some security there.
Were you still doing, so when you first took the jump, were you doing small jobs here, there, and everywhere for different people? Like,
stuff
like that?
Yeah.
And how did you go about, like, getting those clients? Was it just all word of mouth?
Man, to start with, to be honest, for our first sort of 6 months or a year, we were mainly working for builders and just fixing, subbing on hourly and just fixing absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
There's so much rubbish work going around, like, it was sort of, 2022, so we just had that whole COVID period of, rubbish subbies, rubbish builders, all the sort of perfect storm of dramas that had occurred. And so that was us. Like, I obviously had contacts in the building industry, knew a few business owners here and there.
Yeah.
And then, had a couple of a mate who is my main guy now, Supervisor Kane. He had just moved over from New Zealand. I'd gone to school with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
I was like, bro, you want a job? I'm going to start my own thing.
So it was just you and him, yeah.
It was me and him. And then I had another chippy who I'd worked with in London and here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, bro, do you want to jump in? He's like, sweet.
Yeah.
And we pretty much started from there, just rubbish work on hourly with the odd like decent job here and there, but just carpentry work to start with.
Yeah.
And then,
while you're obviously working out the DA, fucking house,
all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like I applied for my builder's license. I was waiting for that to come along. So
how was that process?
Oh, painful.
They make it harder and harder every fucking year.
Bro, it was crazy. Yeah. It was 120 pages of just bullshit. Luckily a member of Master Builders, they have a lady who helps out with all of that stuff and make sure everything's as it should be. So got that. We're doing carpentry work, sort of trying to do this development stuff. Really just took the plunge. I didn't have heaps of money saved up. That was sort of the point of starting with the hourly stuff.
Yeah.
It was sort of should have been a way to sort of keep that cash flow working. And that's how we sort of ended up where we are and got the builder's license. Yeah. Fortunately had like our own job to fall back on or start.
Yeah.
And then we've got a few more coming up now and it was just really a matter of deciding I wanted to do it and just taking the leap. Like I think, you know, you can never be prepared enough. Like you don't know what you don't know. And
that's exactly right.
Yeah. You're going to learn along the way. You just got to do it.
I feel like there's so many guys that listen in, like, you know, if you guys are listening anyway, there's a lot of guys that are like, you know, driving in the ute or whatever like that. And they're at that point in their career. Like you said, you know, you didn't do it as soon as you finished your apprenticeship because that'd be stupid of you, right?
Mm.
You did your time, you traveled around, you worked with a few guys, you subbied out, you were supervisor. Like you're already in your stride.
Mm.
And there's guys, you know, we got a lot of guys where they just finished their apprenticeship and the first thing out of their mouth is, I want to go and work for myself. Yeah. So I'm like, listen, like, do your time, be a subby, like go and work for someone or go and like get your experience there and then take the jump.
Yeah.
And on the flip side as well, we've got guys that have done the time, but they just don't know when the right time is to go and work for themselves. And I just feel like you're right. There really isn't a fucking right time. You either want to do it or you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you're never going to have, you know, I don't know if anyone fucking, they don't want to hear this, but there's never going to be the right amount of money in the account that you're going to feel comfortable about, whether you like it or not. There's never going to be the right fucking gear set up, the right tools, the right uniforms, the right logo, the right fucking this, that, and the other, right? You're never going to have it all sorted. You just roll with it. And execution's everything. Like if you're working with someone, you're like, oh, you know, I could have the best company. I could have the best logo. I could have the best fucking this. I could do this, that, blah, 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 blah. That doesn't mean fucking anything if you just can't execute it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's so many guys that I even speak to that are in business. And it doesn't even mean in construction. That's fucking anything.
Mm.
You know, an idea is only ever an idea. If you're not going to execute on it and just take that fucking leap and work it out as you go, and things can change. Like the same company that we've both got now in 3 years' time won't be the fucking same company that we got then. Like it'll evolve as we sort of evolve. So
yeah,
you know, that's sort of my take on it anyway.
I agree. And I think it's important to really reiterate the fact that, like, you know, that experience thing is key. Like, you know, you don't have to be the man at carpentry or electrical or whatever, but you need sufficient experience to sort of at least know how to figure the problems out.
Mm.
And you need to be interested enough in the business side of things as well. Mm. Like, you can be the man on site, but it doesn't mean you can run a business.
Yeah.
You got to learn that stuff. You got to be just willing to learn as well. Once you take that plunge and do it, like, you know, your balls are on the line. You got to be willing to learn and grow. You got to, you know, do what you say.
Yeah.
And you got to be willing and ready to make mistakes, because you will, and they'll cost you a lot of money probably.
You will lose money faster than you make it in this game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you can make great money, but fuck me, you can lose it 10 times as fast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You just got to be d- diligent as fuck. Eh? Yeah. Like, you just can't sit around and just have that Shelby right attitude. You need to be, you know, crossing your T's and dotting your I's.
Yeah. But it's all just something that you learn along the way, I feel, as well. Like, you're fucking, like, we have a lot of guys in here that have got some really good companies, really successful in that. For the guys that are listening, that are either listening in their car or whatever, like, they would see that and go, oh, you know, but it's all right for you. But it's like, it's at the same time, like, you sort of have to go through that process and fucking and live those lessons. Like, you know, there's a lot of tough fucking pills that you need to swallow.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, as a business owner, you can't show the cash flow is tight. You can't show, you're not going to go to your employees and be like, oh, boys, I'm fucking stressing. I've got no fucking money this week. Like, it's just going to come off shit.
Yeah.
So you have, there's a lot of shit that you've got to fucking deal with. 100%. So, you know, yeah, you do got to love the business aspect of it. You got to, you know, and in regards to doing your time, I feel like the biggest thing that a lot of guys are missing, especially once they've become qualified and they think, yeah, like, I'm the man on site. I know how to do this. I know how to build a house, right? The thing that I'm now starting to find is that there's a lot of guys that are coming through that, yeah, they know how to build a house, but they lack actual management skills, right? They lack how to communicate with people, communicate with apprentices, right? They've only been in maybe 2 or 3-man team, and those 2 or 3 dudes are all mates. Mm. And when they get thrown in the thing of, you know, okay, you know, you need to manage 6 or 7, they get flustered in those moments. So, you know what I mean? And I feel like that's something that you've obviously been exposed to in the supervising game when you're contracted, when you're dealing with different contractors and this, that, and the other, you get that experience. So I feel like for the guys that are working out the next step, I would suggest that if you are qualified and you're looking to take that next leap, try to get yourself in a position where you can get some more management stuff. So whether you're a leading hand for someone, you're a supervisor for someone, where someone can sort of take you underneath their wing and say, like, do this, that, and the other. Because then when you eventually do go out on your own, you're not going to be, you know, you're not going to get flustered in those situations when you've got to deal with accountants, bookkeepers. You got this person ringing you, that person ringing you, this, that, and the other. So
clients hassling you or whatever, you know. Like, you got to... That management experience will pay dividends, like, especially when you get put in the tight situations by subbies or clients or whatever. You need it's a real sort of craft to learn how to speak to people and say the right things at the right time and give the right explanations. And like, it's definitely, I'd definitely be doing a year or two of that before I decide to go out on it.
Like, we literally say, like, even in our company, our sort of thing is we've got like levels on how the boys come up through transitions and stuff, like management and whatever. And I always say to them, like, yes, as you get up to the next level, your responsibilities in regards to, like, actually physically doing the work might decrease, right? The physicality of the work might decrease.
Yeah.
But the flip side is that your managerial style, how you communicate with apprentices, how you communicate with project managers and estimators and all the rest of it, all that fucking stuff actually matters.
Yeah.
You know, I'm finding that there's like a massive gap in the market. Like, there's not a lot of guys that have got that ability, and it's not all, you can't just fucking, you know, the same way that you talk to someone like yourself, like this, how I would, like, if I was a contractor to yourself, the way that I would talk to you is not the way that I'm going to talk to an apprentice or like my apprentice.
Yeah.
Right? So, knowing that difference and knowing how, as you just said, how to say the right thing and when to say it.
Yeah.
That's a fucking art.
Yeah.
And you can't, it's very hard to teach someone that. They've either got it or they don't.
Yeah. There's a lot of finesse to communication and, you can't teach it. You've just got to learn it along the way.
Yeah.
It's just sort of by doing it.
Yeah.
Like a lot of things though in our industry, like, you know, you can, once you've got half an idea, as long as you take the leap or put yourself in a position of learning, you can figure it out along the way.
Yeah.
Unless you're a bit special and maybe should just be on the broom, then it might be a bit tough.
Hey, there's a lot of fucking guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys.
Yeah. Yeah. But you've got to learn the hard way. So,
yeah.
All right. So, we've covered off fucking heaps of ground. But, so fast forward to now. So, you obviously said, you got 4 guys now.
Yeah. So, I've got 4 guys.
Yeah. Primarily focusing on your own development. But you've still got client stuff that you're doing.
Yeah. So, we got, we're probably 50-50.
Yeah.
We're just finishing up a client job in Mount Gravatt. Have a luxury build down Burleigh.
Yeah.
Coming up, and then
All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Idol Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode.
Yeah, sort of all the boys are at Cooperill at the moment on that development, and then we've got one coming up in Camp Hill. Yep. So
no apprentices?
We've got one apprentice.
Yep.
And I've got three carpenters, and then just using subby chippies at the moment, just sort of give us a boost.
Yep.
I had initially, and I was pretty much out straight out the gate, got up to when we started as a carpentry company, had 7 employees. And they're all legends and everything, but I found that, you know, sort of going that hard that early, we were just having to do, just bigger's not better pretty much is what I learned. We're having to do work that was not that enjoyable or not profitable just to keep everyone busy.
Yeah.
So anyway, where we are now, got the 4 boys, they're all legends, do a great job, and we're just trying to focus on our own stuff now, whether it be our build or builds for clients.
Yeah.
Just trying to stick in that sort of mid to high-end residential
building. Yeah, just touching on that, like that is something that for me has been a bit of a fucking bit of a learning thing that I've gone through, like in regards to growth, scaling, where we want to go, as you just said, you know, you're doing jobs that you don't, that aren't the prettiest jobs and whatever. But, you know, that's something that for me, because we are in the contracting game, we're dealing B2B.
Yeah.
I've sort of had to really take a bit of a look at where we want to go, what the style of work is that we want to do, and doubling down on that. You know, I'm no longer on the tool, like I haven't been on the tools for ages. And so, you know, I'm thankful enough that I've got guys in and around me that, you know, we've got systems and processes and stuff in place for teams and whatnot now. But, like they've also they also understood that they didn't want to be doing that shit work forever either. So it was cash 22 and to enable us to get into that better style of work that was better, more profitable. It just had to be one of those things where I had to take a bit of a step back and go, all right, like if I do want to scale and get to, you know, I don't want to be staying stagnant forever.
Yeah.
We had to fucking adjust because it's very easy. Yeah, fuck, who said it to me the other day? There was an apprentice that literally said it to me. Oh, not the other day. It was a while ago now. And they actually got approached. I don't know how it ended up happening. This was years ago now, but they were doing a job and they got approached by a supervisor for something. And they were like, the supervisor just said, oh, you know, I wasn't there or anything like that. And I'm pretty sure the supervisor, I don't even know who it was. They just went up to him and, you know, said, oh, you know, I've got this job here at this rate. Apprentice being an apprentice goes, beep, boop, beep, do the calculation. Like, oh, fuck, it's mad money. Like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he come up to me and he's like, oh, he's got like fucking 10 of these. Like, I can do that. Like, you know, when I'm qualified, like I'm going straight away and I'm going to get all these POs and do that, this, that, and the other. And I was like, you don't understand, mate. Mm. Like, it's not, you know, you're just seeing it for face value. You don't actually understand.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like, in all honesty, I feel like those builders and people, like, you guys that are listening, you guys know who the fuck we're talking about, but, like, I feel like those builders prey on 100%. Companies and guys that just really don't really have an idea.
Guys, like, that don't understand business, I couldn't agree more. Like, I've seen it so much, and I think it's a problem in our industry, certain builders. Yeah.
Let me just say as well, like, just before you keep going, like, I'm not going to sit here and say that I've never done it, because I have.
Yeah.
There are industry rates and there are jobs out there that we've done to fill in, but for the majority, it's, you know, that I feel like they hope that guys just, just take it, because they're no fucking idiots. They've all sort of worked it out that they know how long it should take. They know what the industry pay is, and, you know, they're not going to leave you any room to fucking move.
Nah, you're going to be running around screaming and just to sort of try and make your hourly rate. Like, that's when we were just doing carpentry work, like, couldn't get out of bed for a lot of those rates. And I think that's part of the problem in the building industry here as well, is, you know, a lot of these builders with the monopoly on the market, especially with, like, so much carpentry being subcontracting, they're not paying enough for people to put the time in to go over and above to do a great job. Like, you know, you got to run from point A to B and scream at the boys on some jobs just to hopefully, you know, make what you probably could on hourly working for a custom builder or something.
Mm. Yeah, we literally put up a video ages ago and we got heaps of flack for it about has the quality of carpentry decreased or increased over the last 10 years, right? It's actually really surprising when I jumped in the comment section, had a look at the vast majority of people that was talking. And, you know, what I was trying to get out, obviously people like to get in there, but what I was trying to say was, you know, I personally don't think the carpentry quality has decreased. Mm. I feel like what's happened is that, as you just said, what it's doing is obviously there's a two-pronged approach. You can't blame one without the other. You can't sit there and say, oh, it's all the builders' fault, right? They're not paying enough. At the same time, they're also not the ones signing the dotted line and forcing you to do the work.
Yeah.
Right? You're not in chains. Yeah. You're a grown-ass adult with a company.
Yeah.
If you decide to do that work, you've signed to the devil, fucking do the job.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't blame them to the full extent. But also, you know, it's like one of those things. Because those guys do it, they have got to fucking be quick and fast and do it. And what I disagree with, and it's a common thing that I find, what really fucking pricks me up the wrong way is when builders know what they're doing. Right? As you said, they've had the monopoly. They're no dummies. They've done this. They've got floors and floors of CAs and PMs and whatnot, right? They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
But then to expect $1 million quality for shit money, that's what annoys me.
Yeah.
Is you can't have the best of both.
No. Right?
You can't expect to pay fucking cents on the dollar
for
something, but then expect, you know, a premium product.
Yeah, speed, cost, and quality you get too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, that fucking lovely triangle that everyone likes to talk about, right? Yeah. But I have dealt with builders in the past where they pay the cents on the dollar.
Right?
And as I said, you can't just blame one without the other. I've been the idiot that accepted it.
Yeah.
I've learned my lesson the hard way.
Yeah.
For you guys that are thinking about starting business or going down that path, you're going to have to fucking walk that yourself and find out.
Yeah.
You know, what's the saying? Fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
That's literally what you got to do. So I've done it, never again. Yeah. And I know who's good and who's not. So it's one of those things. That's the one thing that really pisses me off the most is the fact that there's guys out there that know exactly what they're doing, the rates they're asking for guys to work for. Obviously they find people that do it. And I'm the first person. I literally spoke to a builder this morning, right? They sent me their rates for this job. I don't go off that. If you send me your rates, you can send it to me. I'm like, look, but we've got our own rates now that we charge.
Yeah.
And I can adjust them. Obviously, we can come to an agreement, but I've got our fucking rates that we go off.
Yeah.
They're not the cheapest rates, right? And as I literally say to all of them on the phone, if you're looking for someone cheaper, you'll find someone.
Yeah.
And I say that to all of them. You will find someone that's cheaper, 100%.
Yeah.
Get on a group, fucking reach out to someone within an hour. I'll find you someone that would be cheaper, right?
Maybe cheaper initially, but not cheaper in the long run.
You sort of get what I'm saying. Yeah, like that's literally what I say to them. Like, you will definitely find someone that is cheaper if that's what you're trying to chase.
Yeah.
Right? And I feel sorry for the guys that do it, because then they get the fucking stick and then the builder goes, oh, this is shit. This is fucking wrong. You did this. You cut this corner, this, that, and the other. Yeah. Right? And then you got to go back 1,000 times over and you're constantly going back. Defect this, defect that. But hey, you got to fucking learn your lesson somehow. So we could talk about that.
It's a good way to learn a few hard lessons real quick.
Yeah. So. Go out to Springfield.
Yeah.
Drive around. Find yourself a site supervisor and say, listen, I'll take all your purchase orders.
Yeah.
You will be busy as fuck.
Yeah.
And then ring me in 6 months and tell me how you're going with it.
Yeah. Tell me how much you enjoy your life.
Yeah. Work every Saturday, 12 hours.
Yeah.
And it's mad. Yeah. But hey, I'm not going to sit here and say it's shit, because I've also...
Some people probably love it too. Like, I've met guys who love just doing frame after frame for these builders, and they make money, so good on them. Like,
and I'm always good on you, actually.
Yeah, well, that's where I'm like, do you understand business? Like, are you not paying yourself a wage?
Yeah.
So you think...
That's what I mean. And we're literally on the same wavelength. Like, I had a conversation with a guy a few weeks ago, and he's telling me that... Sorry, it wasn't even a guy, it was a supervisor. He was telling me he's got this crew,
fucking, this is the PO. They're making money. They're making money. They got eight guys. They do a frame in 2 days. Right?
Yeah.
He's telling me to my face, he's going, I'm telling you they're making money. Because I wouldn't do the work. Because he was telling me the PO. I was like, there's no way I fucking touch it.
Yeah.
He's like, I was like, just get those guys to do it. He's like, I'm telling you, they're making money. And I sat back and I was like, I don't give a fuck what you say.
Yeah.
I was like, they're not.
No.
They can't be.
No.
I was like, they can't be. There is only so many fucking hours in a day.
100%.
There's only so much that guys can get done.
100%.
And even if they do all that work, no defect, no callback, the weather's fucking perfect, no delay on materials, the supervisor comes with the right fucking et cetera, no guys running sick, then they'll make their money.
Yeah.
But everyone fucking knows in construction, guys are going to come in sick, the rain's going to fuck you. 9 times out of 10, there's not the material there or something ends up fucking happening.
Yeah.
It doesn't rock up. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, all these fucking other things that you're relying on just to make that $1,000. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. So I remember just saying to him, I was like, nah.
Yeah.
They're not. So, like, for you guys, like, don't get me wrong, there's guys that are going to be, oh, fucking, you got no idea. Like, you fucking, we make money. And I'm like,
yeah.
Really work it out. Like, really sit down, blow your figures.
Yeah.
Like, really blow it up. You know, your super, your boys, are you putting time up? Are you putting fucking money away for when they all take out
all your
insurances? Like, really nut it out. And I guarantee you, you're not. You're not. But hey, you got to fucking walk your own path.
Yeah, it's a tough game to start with. And then. You work out what works along the way and what sort of work you should and shouldn't be doing.
That's it. Who's good, who's not. Like, yeah. You know, we do stuff now for resis, like multi-residential stuff. We do a lot of towning houses. We do a lot of, like, that's, you know, that's the resi game that we do. We really don't do standalones anymore.
Mm.
And, you know, for the guys that we do multi-residential stuff for, the rates are higher. They get a good fucking product. Yeah, it's very simple. It's not architecturally fucking duplexes with mad curves and whatever.
Yeah.
Standard, right? But the rates are slightly higher, but hey, they get a fucking better job.
Mm.
There's no issues. We can go back. I've got the margin in it.
Yeah.
So there's no arguments with shit. If, you know, something goes in, I'm not ringing them going, nah, fuck you, I'm not coming back, right?
Yeah.
Who cares? Go in there, right? But they're no idiots as well. They know that. They know that if they go slightly higher, they get that relationship.
Yeah, 100%.
So, but that's also a risk on their behalf. So, you know, they're like, you know, we don't fucking know you, blah, 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 blah. So you have to sell them on that. But, But anyway, fuck, we're getting on. All right. Well, continuing on, we've covered off a lot of groundwork here, but I'm going to keep it moving. So, all right. Now, Ethan, superstar builder. Right, project.
Definitely would have said superstar, mate.
Superstar builder. Socials. We got all this stuff, right? Right from the outset, but tell us what are some common things that you're finding now being a builder with, you know, challenges in the industry dealing with clients. Like, we interview a lot of builders that come on the show, and I feel like a common occurrence is clients underestimating the value of, so, like, is that something that you have to fucking, you know, and how have you coped with that? Are you in with certain designers or architects, or have you fucking dealt with that? You know what I mean? Because you get a set of plans and they say, hey, Ethan, we want you to build our house.
A beautiful house for $200,000.
You
know what I mean?
You get like this, you're like, oh, this is a mad house. Yeah. Like, shoot, this is going to look sick. All right. And they're like, oh, but we want you to build it for $500,000.
Yeah.
And you're like looking at it going, fuck, that's a $1.2 million job. Easy.
Yeah.
How have you like managed to do that? Like, how have you coped with that?
Man, I guess there's a few ways. Like, straight off the bat, just honesty and transparency. I'll be like, look, you're not going to be able to build that for that. Like, you need to either reassess your budget or reassess sort of what sort of build or product you're chasing.
Yeah.
that's usually a good place to start.
Have you ever gone in to a job and, you know, lowered your price to win the work?
No, I haven't, fortunately. Usually when if the price needs to come down, then we need to sit there and do some sort of cost engineering. Like, you know, I'll go through the plans with the client, be like, look, we could swap this construction method for this construction method, or this material for this material, or, mm-hmm. or change these things. Like if you look, their budget has to be sort of within the ballpark of the project that they're proposing.
Mm-hmm.
But we can start working backwards. Sort of, if they've designed exactly what they really want, but then the budget doesn't quite match, then yeah, we can start working backwards, try and figure out ways for it to work. And if that still doesn't work, then like I'm happy to move on amicably.
Yeah.
I'll help them. Like I'm always happy to answer any questions they have in relation to building and things like that. But
yeah,
you know, if they want to go find the old mate who will do it cheaper, then all good. But
yeah,
like generally, so you've got that sort of, that's sort of the first prong of the approach.
Yeah.
And then second would, you know, if the budget's ballpark to what it needs to be and they're still not a bit sure, or they're talking about dollars and we've done this sort of cost engineering, then you got to start trying to, you know, preach your value and all those sorts of things.
And how are you talking about value? How have you learned, you know, with socials and your brand and all that sort of stuff? Like, is that something that you and your partner have, like, you know, is that something that you're now starting to double down on, lean on a bit more? Is it, you know?
Look, I find that, like, the whole value thing,
because you go good on socials, like you, like we were just literally just talking about, like you know,
yeah,
do some good stuff like through there.
Yeah, well, we're lucky we've got a good guy who sort of handles all that for us.
Yeah.
Have
you found value in that? And what's your thoughts of social media?
Yeah, look, I think we're too young and fresh and don't have enough to show for ourselves yet. It's a good starting point, and we're, you know, creating a foundation of or sort of a story for who we are and what we do, and giving people something to look at.
Mm-hmm.
As far as it getting us new leads and things like that, pretty much everything is word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I generally find they're the best ones as well.
Yeah.
Sort of word of mouth.
Yeah, when people come to you, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
There's a lot less selling.
Yeah, there's less selling. There's already a trust element. You know, it's definitely easier to progress those sort of inquiries.
Yep.
Maybe if you know, Gray or someone like that, you'll get heaps of epic ones off Instagram, mm-hmm. but... yeah, we're not there yet, but the whole value thing and sort of selling a value, like it's not really anything that we've sort of integrated into the whole social media thing
mm-hmm.
yet. Like we just try and be who we are, do great work,
just transparency,
be great people, transparency, yeah, man. Like, and when it comes to selling value with clients, I find that if you just be who you are and, you know, like we've got sort of, there's values I live by and they're pretty much the company values, and all the boys, you know, they also sort of resonate with all these values, and it's just who we are, what we do. And I don't have to go and, you know, talk a whole lot of shit saying, you know, we're the best at this or we're the best at that. Cause in all honesty, like we don't have that much proof of that yet.
Yeah.
Like I can't go and say we've won a million awards, like all that sort of stuff. We haven't done any of that.
Yeah.
What we are is like, yeah, we're honest, we're transparent, we care a lot,
yep.
we do what we say, and then, you know, you sort of, you say these things to them,
yep.
and then you start showing them that you are these things you're saying, you know, that you have a lot of correspondence with clients, like in the preliminary phase of a building project, or it doesn't really, or other trades, you know, you're often, if you're quoting to win their work, there'll be a lot of backwards and forth. Like if they see that you're super diligent, asking the right questions, you are responsive to emails, calls, texts, like, yeah, man, I think that sort of shows your value, because we can all talk the talk, but you've got to be able to walk it too.
Mm.
Especially
like I know that struggle. Like we had a guy on, Oliver, I think, a few weeks ago, and, yeah, we were talking about that whole value, especially right in the early stages when you're doing your business, right?
Yeah.
How do you do it? Like, we get a lot of guys that comment that want to know, you know, how do you fucking do it? What's the silver bullet? And it's like, obviously, you know, this is not one of those things where you fake it till you make it.
Mm.
You can fluff things up and make it seem like there's a lot more depth to your company than there actually is.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's ways that you can do that. But for the most part, what we find anyway, the most common thing that everyone says when they start out is just transparency.
Mm.
You know, doesn't mean that you have to be like, oh, you know, I've only got this and that. Like, you can fluff things up.
Right? Yeah. But you got to.
Yeah. You got to. Like, but it, yeah, but it, but it's very, early. Yeah. So there's a very fine line between faking it completely.
Yeah.
Right. And undercutting it. You have to find that fucking sweet spot. Like, for me, as I sort of said on that other podcast, like, right in the early days, man, I was slinging work boots in a trailer. I'd park up around the corner. I would change my work boots to my jeans.
Right? Yeah.
Right? I'd change to a nice shirt. I'd get a fucking wet rag and I'd wipe my dust off my arms. Like, that was how it fucking rolled, right? Yeah. But that is crazy. That's me. That, you know, and then I would roll and I'd say, oh, you know, yeah, big day in the office. Right? But that wasn't me faking it. That was just me sort of fluffing it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? And creating that depth rather than me just rocking up right in front of their house with my trailer, getting fucking changed in front of the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of what I mean to you guys. So it's not a case of you have to completely fake it, but there are ways around it that you can create a little bit more depth and make you seem a little bit more, you know, than you actually are.
Yeah.
And obviously, but in saying that, the number one thing, as you said, was transparency.
Yeah.
You have to be transparent. You have to fucking be honest with them. You can't lie to them and tell them you're a superstar builder. You won all these awards. You got fucking 15 staff. You got an administrator. You got a massive office. And then they call you out and then they look into you. And I feel like that's why social media is one of those things that can be really leveraged to a point.
Mm.
Obviously, there's guys out there that fake that only put on social media what you want them to see. Like,
yeah,
the guys that you were just talking about. You know, you only ever see the highlight reel.
Yeah.
You don't actually see the full fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like with everyone, as if you're going to put the full fucking story. If you cop a job up, as if you're going to put it on there and be like, oh, you know, yeah, boys, we fucked this one up. Yeah, have a look.
Right? Yeah.
You're only ever going to put on what people want to see. And people are only ever going to see what they want to see as well. You know, and that's something that we're starting to find out. You know, on a minute video, people might only see 5 seconds of it. Right? They don't know the context of it. But they're just going to fucking see what they want to see. And that's it. So that's why, like, I feel like social media for you guys that are starting out, you can leverage it to a degree and basically create that depth and create that persona and what you want to see. You can have the nice logo and put up the concept photos and, oh, we're doing this, project one and blah, 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 blah. But keep it real. Like, keep that transparency there. Flip the fucking phone and, you know, talk your shit and, you know, give the clients what they want to see. Because as you would know, if you put up a, you know, if you're working for Joanne down the road and you're doing a renovation for her and you put up a video of that renovation, she's going to froth it.
Mm.
She's going to use that and show all her friends. Mm. Oh, my God, look at what he's done here, right? So I feel like it's a good fucking thing, but each to their own, you know.
Yeah, man, yeah, like it definitely can be and it definitely is. I think it's important just to, yeah, sort of, be who you are, and you know, when it does start bringing in clients, it's going to help you bring in the sort of clients that you want to work with. Mm. And just not to forget also like websites and things like that, like, you know, it's, you know, 40, 45 and younger that use social media and are heavy on that, but you know, if you want clients who are sort of, you know, over that sort of rough age bracket, I mean, more and more people are using social media, but you know, a lot of people will,
your demographic,
yeah, your demographic, a lot of older people will just look at websites and things like that. So
and our, like our same in our game, you know what I mean, like, because we're B2B, LinkedIn,
yeah
you know what I mean, we're dealing with those sort of clientele. You know, obviously we pump TikTok, Instagram, whatever, but that's not really our demographic that we're trying to fucking niche down, right? That's good for fucking growth.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you're right, you know, website, depending on who you're really trying to target, is one of those things. And obviously there are superstar builders in Brisbane that have massive followings and stuff, but everyone tends to forget they jumped on the shit fucking 7 years ago when no one was really doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's easy, you know. Then
all credit to them for the foresight.
Yeah, but, you know what I mean. Like, and everyone looks at them; they don't really know the story. Yeah. But yeah, man. So we're coming to the end. It always feels like we've only been talking for 20 minutes, but
yeah.
Hey, it's, you know, we are coming to the end of it. So yeah. I've only got now, at the end of each one, we like to do a bit of a fire round segment
yeah.
questions, all right? So they are sort of, I'm going to ask them and you're just going to try your best.
You want some quick answers, not verbal diarrhea.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Just try your best, whatever. Yeah. If you don't feel like answering it, come back to it. I'll ask the next one. So
yeah.
They are sort of relevant to you. So describe your dream project in 4 words or less. Post-war. Like what's your sort of niche? What's your dream? Let me rephrase that. Not your dream project. What's the project that you look for now that you really want to do? You know what I mean? That you're trying to niche down on?
Trying to niche down on pre-war luxury homes, turn them from something rubbish into something epic.
Yeah. So pre-war.
Yeah, pre-war, but post-war.
Yeah.
600 square meters plus blank slate.
Yeah.
That'd probably be my dream.
Yeah.
Bigger section, the better.
Yeah.
Low set. On like 800 to 1,000 square meters, yeah.
No asbestos.
Yeah.
Nah, sweet. All right. New Zealand, London, Brisbane. Which one's best for building?
Well, I'm gonna have to say Brisbane.
Really?
Just you know, but that's just because of my experience with it.
Yeah.
Met so many amazing people.
Yep.
Got an amazing company now with amazing employees.
Yeah.
Do
you ever envision yourself moving back to New Zealand?
Nah. Here to stay now.
Okay.
Yeah. I still won't support the Wallaby.
Yeah. All right. Sweet. Yeah. All right. Best piece of advice you've ever received?
One that I struggle to listen to.
Yeah.
Is don't go too hard too early.
Yeah.
Just flow as smooth and smooth as fast.
Yeah.
You know, most ambitious people, you know, they want to run before they can walk. Mm. I'm 100% like that.
Mm.
It's 100% hard to be, you know, take it slow, but that's probably the key piece of advice that I've been told.
I've always just gone with like, let it, like for us anyway, it's just, you know, let it roll. It feels right in the moment, then go for it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't try to pull or push it either way. Like if I don't feel right at the moment, if I feel like even now,
yeah.
You know, if I feel like I'm taking too much risk or if I feel like it's, you know, not right, you know, I don't feel right in here.
Yeah.
I just don't go for it. But if I'm like, if I feel good in here, I'm like, hey, it's like, my mindset's good. Yeah. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Like, why would I go against it? You know?
100%.
All right. What's your go-to stress reliever?
Definitely gym.
Definitely gym.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're pretty good. You're pretty active, eh?
Yeah. We love it, eh?
Yeah.
What's
your go-to thing? CrossFit?
Yeah, do CrossFit.
Clean your jerks.
Love that, yeah.
I'd be fucking doing, break my back.
Yeah, mate, like I'm a bit average at them. But I love CrossFit, eh? I've always been into exercise and sports and keeps your mind sharp, obviously body healthy, but yeah, it's just key for stress relief. You know, you go do a hard workout, you come out feeling great, you know, it sort of distracts you from the day to day.
Morning or the afternoon?
Definitely morning.
Yeah.
Just then I'm on for my day.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, it's a great habit to have. And then depending on what you do, but like if you play a team sport or something like CrossFit, like there's a community aspect to it as well. So that's just another great.
And you and your partner are like.
Yeah, we both do it. Yeah, we do competitions and stuff. We're pretty good. Yeah, we're pretty good now. Like it almost ended up in, or it definitely ended up in arguments and a bit of fire. She's pretty fiery.
Yeah.
So there was definitely a bit of fire to start with doing that together, but we've got it pretty down pat now and it's pretty awesome to be able to do competitions with my wife
Who can do more muscle ups?
Oh, I'd like to say me, but she's probably not that far behind. Oh, a bit of an athlete.
Yeah, sick. All right. If you could instantly master a new skill, what would it be?
mate, probably handstand walking, eh? I've been at the gym, but trying to do that for months now.
Is it high rocks coming up or something? Is that a fucking CrossFit?
Handstand walking in high rocks, but...
Are you doing it?
Yeah, I am doing high rocks, actually. Me and a mate.
Get it up on your socials.
Hey, it's Regal Crane Hire, if you need a crane. Yeah. A little shameless plug, him and I are doing it. So that'll be good, but yeah, I'm not the most coordinated, any of those gymnastics movements, I try hard and don't get too far, so that'd definitely be what I want to sort of master.
I was going to say, you're not a small dude either,
I look like an absolute Gumby.
No, that should be good. How do you reckon you're going to go high rocks?
We'll go all right. We're just doing it for fun. It's a sort of...
He says that. You watch him on the day.
Yeah.
We're just doing it for fun, I swear to God.
Yeah, then it's sort of my cop-out for if we don't do great, eh? Well, we're just doing it for fun. It's definitely a lean sort of running man's game. Don't sort of fall into that category
I've seen some stuff. I'm like, fuck, man, there's some big dudes that do it. It's a fucking pretty, bodybuilding looking dudes that do fucking high rocks. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
Really built for running.
That's what's good about it, though, eh? Anyone can do it. Anyone can participate and have fun. Yeah. But, the bigger guys don't go as well as the guys who are great at running generally, but there's definitely some units out there with epic engines who still hold their own.
Yeah, sick. All right. Well, anyway, that's basically the end of this episode, guys. So, Ethan, I wanted to thank you for coming on. We're definitely going to run this back sooner than later. And I hope you guys that are listening got some insight into what happens on site, especially at Riot Projects. And Ethan, thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Look, I'm no sort of... It's early days for me in terms of business and all of that sort of thing, but I sort of like what you guys are doing here, spreading the message, trying to, teach people the ins and outs of business and the whole mental health side of things. Yeah. I just want to say to anyone listening as well, I'm always keen to share what knowledge I do have.
Yeah. And that's half the reason why we've got this platform, man, is just to basically, as I said, it's just to give something back to the guys that are out there, and
100%.
We're getting good feedback, and guys are listening and they're getting something out of it, and that's fucking pretty much why I'm doing it. So.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. You guys are doing a good thing, but if anyone ever has any questions, I'm here. Riot Projects is here to flick us a message and ask us whatever, and hopefully we can have a chat and someone might learn something. Yeah.
And for any of you listeners that are over in New Zealand and thinking of coming over,
hit
him up. Alright, too easy. We'll see you on the next one. Thank you for listening.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it. Tune into next week's episode, as this will be one that you don't want to miss.